Payoff.com is a paying sponsor of this Thrifters Villa podcast. You've tried balance transfers and budgeting, but high interest rates and unrelenting bill cycles make it almost impossible to get out of credit card debt on your own. Instead of another new savings technique, you need a clear path out of debt, and that's what a payoff loan can do. A payoff loan is a personal loan backed by member-centric credit unions designed to help you pay off your credit cards with rates as low as 5.9% APR and loan amounts up to $35,000 with no hidden fees and personal customer service support from Payoff to help you reach your financial goals. Some of the benefits of a payoff loan may also include potential credit score boost, one monthly payment, and savings from lower interest rates. Go to payoff.com/thriftersvilla to learn more. Checking loan rates won't affect your credit score. Try something new. Pay off your credit card debt with Payoff. NMLS ID number 1396805. Not all applicants may qualify. Loan only available within the United States. Loan is not available in all states. Payoff works with lending partners who originate the loans. Additional terms, conditions, and eligibility requirements may apply. More information is available at payoff.com/thriftersvilla. Now back to the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Thrifters Villa, a podcast for resellers and entrepreneurs. I'm Daniela.
And I'm Lori. And today we have a very special guest and friend with us. Her name is Jessica. Jessica is a multi-platform seller, and you can find her on Instagram at JS Thrifts and Flips. I met Jessica through our reselling community on Instagram. Jessica caught my attention even more so than our general conversations back and forth shortly after the death of George Floyd. I was looking for guidance to deepen my understanding about what was happening in our country and changes I needed to make to help be part of the solution. I found myself glued to Jessica's stories. I was particularly interested in knowing what a Black woman had to say during this time. I knew I had to reach out to Jessica to ask her to be on the podcast, and I can't wait to get to know you better, Jessica. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jessica. I'm so excited to get to know you, and I know our audience is going to be excited to get to know you too. So let's get the show started.
Here we go. All right. Well, Jessica, what we usually start off with our podcast is we just do like a little recap, kind of unrelated to what we're going to chat about. Mm-hmm. So just kind of talk about how everyone's week was with regards to reselling. How was your week, Jess? How are things going? How are sales?
Sales are like down for me, but that's just because I haven't been putting in the work. And it really started with like when COVID-19 hit. The last time I've been to a thrift store was March 14th. And I remember even then feeling a little weird about it, but like our Salvation Army had, had half off and we hadn't had any confirmed cases here. So I was okay going, but the thrift store was pretty empty. And then, that Monday we got our first confirmed case here. So I kind of like, I hit the brakes immediately on that. And then a week later we were, put under stay at home. And so then I transitioned to, for the first time ever, like I've been reselling 3 years and I've always used ThredUp to send inventory to, but I had never sourced. Mm-hmm. And so then I started sourcing on ThredUp, and that, like, I know people say like getting like sourcing online is easy because it comes to your door, but it's so much harder to source online. Like I was up to 3 or 4 o'clock just going through pages and pages and pages like of their outlet section because there's just so much inventory and it almost felt like I was going down like this black hole. I didn't think I was going to end. So I think they had over like 50,000 items. Yes. And so I did low to high, I think. No, I did newest to oldest and it was about 520 pages, I think. So I did about 130 pages a night.
Just oh my quickly. God. Are you kidding? That's insane.
No.
Oh my God.
No. And then it's even harder too, because with the way they're like the way they put their, like their categories with their brands. So like we know Anthropology has like a lot of different in-house brands. Mm-hmm. And so those brands aren't put on, like they don't mark them as Anthropology. They mark them as that brand. And so sometimes like we know the main ones like Maeve, Deletta.
Right.
And like some of the other ones, Metal Rue. But some of them I'm like, oh, that look like it could be an Anthropology piece, but it doesn't have the name. I have to click it and then open it. And then I have to like research on it. And then I was like going to check a flip, seeing if it was worth buying. Like it was a huge headache going through all of that.
Did you find, once you kind of got through everything, did you find some great pieces, like things that they had underpriced because maybe they weren't familiar with a good brand name, or did you end up placing a good, you did.
Now that was a bad thing too, because then I ended up placing like too much because it just felt like it was way more items than I've of course had ever seen in a thrift store. So I think I placed maybe 4 orders. Because I think one day they had like a sale on kind of like regular stuff, mm-hmm. but with the outlet, they were doing this sale. If you bought, it was like a tiered sale. So it depends on how many items you bought, how much your discount would be. And I think if you bought 20 or more items, it would be 40% off of that price. And so like some of the items were like $9.99, $6.99, $5.99 with the 40% off. So I would try to make my orders be like, you know, at least 20 items so I can get the cheapest price as possible.
So you must be a professional now.
No, I haven't gone back and looked. I was like, that took way too much time.
It took years off your life, Jessica.
It did, yes. My eyes were hurting.
Oh, well, I know Daniela did a lot of online sourcing too. I think I'm like the novice with the online sourcing. Daniela's been hitting it pretty hard too.
But I haven't done ThredUp. I did one order on ThredUp. I did one order on The RealReal because they sent me a credit. They randomly send emails sometimes for like $30 off. And I went to the clearance section and got 2 items that were $15. Mm-hmm. And then most of my sourcing has been with Poshmark, honestly. That's where I've gotten most of my stuff. Really? Mm-hmm. You can find some really good deals in there because not everyone that's on Poshmark is a seller.
Like a reseller like us.
Yeah. A lot of people on Poshmark are just, and they'll flat out say like getting rid of stuff in my closet. Like that's their title, like removing things from my closet. And so you're not, you know, they're not always labeling it as Everlane or Madewell or Reformation. Like they're labeling it as like moving sale or something like that. So you just have to get creative in the way that you're searching for stuff. But I've gotten some pretty good things by sourcing on Poshmark. Now, Jess, are your thrift stores open now?
Yes, they are. Okay. I can't remember exactly when they opened, but we actually down here, like, I would say the South as a whole wasn't hit hard, but in Louisiana particularly, we were hit hard pretty early. Yeah. So we kind of the state took precautions super early, which I'm so glad because we were, like I said, I think we were, I don't say at home, I think it started maybe March 21st or 22nd, which I was really surprised by. But like I said, we got hit super hard. And so I think they opened back up a few weeks ago. Now we have like gradually started coming off of stay-at-home orders. About a month ago, we went to like where businesses that weren't essential could open up at 25% and the capacity. And then they watched that for 2 weeks. And I think maybe just last week, we're now at like 50% capacity, but I have not ventured out to a thrift store yet.
So you've been pretty conservative through it all, like not taking any chances.
Yeah, I have. My first chance actually was yesterday. And then like when I got home, my throat started feeling a little funny, but I know.
Oh no.
Yes. Me being anxious because I went to Nordstrom Rack and yesterday with my mom, it was packed. Like it was so many people. I was really shocked. And I was really glad people were wearing masks for the most part. Yeah. So I was like, okay, so I do feel comfortable because of course we had masks on. They even have masks like when you walk in. I guess if you didn't have any, they had the little blue mask you could put on.
Oh wow, that's nice. That's good.
They had hands. They had it was like very fancy. It had like a lady with a little station when you walked in. She had hand sanitizer. She had masks. She was like telling you it's 40% off. But yeah, still a lot of people. But yeah, for the most part, I still have just been trying to social distance as much as possible.
That's good. I mean, I just feel like everybody is so different. And even when we were at our height of, you know, the cases being so crazy here in Massachusetts, we still did not have actual state shelter in place orders. Like it was still seemed like it was optional in our state.
It was suggested.
It was suggested.
Yeah,
but,
it was suggested, you know, in Rhode Island too.
If you wanted to blow it off, you could, which blew my mind because it just, the numbers were increasing. But finally we're things are looking good right now. So I'm cautiously optimistic if people, I don't know, we'll see. The COVID conversation could go on for days, right? We can go on forever. But So Daniela, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing okay. So I haven't really done too much in terms of, you know, reseller. I've listed stuff. I've gone sourcing and you know, I've definitely checked out the local thrift stores. You know, they're underwhelming. Mm-hmm. I can say it 100 times. It's underwhelming. And the prices are just really, really bad. Like it's bad. I posted a story. Some of you guys might've seen it, and it's just like $16.99 for a Madewell dress that's used. It's crazy.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
We've had to be, I've definitely had to be more creative. I think if you don't have a lot of time, then it can be very frustrating. And there, I mean, at first I was frustrated by the prices, Daniela and Jess, but then I just started to like laugh at them. Like when a soft and sexy t-shirt for $11.99, I was like, ha ha ha.
Yeah, it's comical. It's gotten to the point where it's like, okay, like it's a joke, right? Like these prices are jokes. They're not the real deal. It's, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what goes on the next few weeks here as we transition to phase 3. You know, I don't know how that will change things, but I know they have donations. I know they're back there. I just don't like the way they're pricing them. That's really what it comes down to. But I've been doing a lot of online sourcing, and you know, my sales are okay, nothing crazy. They're definitely down the last 2 or 3 months, but I'm okay with it. You know, I have a full-time job, so I make it work. You know, not that I don't rely on my reselling income, because I do use it to pay off bills and savings and whatnot, but I'm just being more cautious in my spending and all of that. And yeah, I haven't been feeling too great, and I know I haven't been too vocal about it, but I've had some stuff going on pulmonary wise, and I'm fine. You know, I'm going for additional testing and stuff. It's just, I've been having some issues with my breathing, and it's not COVID related for anyone who is wondering. Nothing is COVID related. It's just, there's something going on in my body and we're trying to figure out what it is. So hopefully with time, it will calm down and I'll be okay.
Every day I'm like, you don't have COVID, do you?
No, I don't have COVID.
You get another test. Are you COVID positive? Like every day.
I don't have COVID. I just can't breathe.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, no.
That's about it.
Poor thing.
Yeah, it's okay. What about you, Lori? Tell us about Lori's week.
I don't even know. I can't even remember what I ate for breakfast.
Did you go to Nordstrom Rack yet, Lori? Totally off topic, but you guys just opened up Nordstrom Rack. So have you gone?
Going tomorrow. My good friend who messaged me, and she said, oh, by the way, I went to Nordstrom Rack. Everything was 40% off. That's why when you said it, Jess, that was like, oh my gosh, that's right. I have to go there tomorrow.
I know. I might come into Massachusetts this week and go to Nordstrom Rack. I'm not going to lie.
I think I'm going to hit Nordstrom Rack and then do the Savers. That's in the same town. Because I haven't been to the one in Natick. So I don't know if I'll go tomorrow or the day after. Did you find some good deals, Jess, at Nordstrom Rack?
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was well, not even just like deals wise. I was just surprised how much inventory they had.
Oh, they have like, so much.
Yes. So like so much. My mom, she wanted to find some shoes, and she had found, I found them, because it's crazy now with reselling. Just like I was into fashion before then, but there's just so many brands in the world. It's mind boggling.
So much and to so, learn.
Yeah, it's so many. And so we were like, because the way ours is, it's shoe story. So the shoes were upstairs. So we got on the escalators, and I had seen a pair of, she wanted some walking shoes because she's like gotten into walking and like exercising. And so I'd seen some Echoes, and like she stands at her job. So I was like, oh, look at these Echo shoes. And they're kind of, they're not high top, they're not low either, but they're really nice black shoes. And they were, I think those retail for $168, and then they were on sale for, I think, $37.48. So they're about like $29 or something. And they're in very good condition. Because sometimes, like when I think Nordstrom Rack gets returns, like on the ticket at the bottom, it'll say something like worn and refinished, but they were in really good condition.
Huh.
And then
I noticed that. And sometimes it will say on the tag altered and something else on like the clothing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Wow. And then I found some good, for me, I bought a pair of Madewell sandals, which they retail for $60, which actually kind of cheap because Madewell shoes are usually like $98.
Yeah. They're expensive.
But they retail for $60. Yeah. And they were on sale for $22.49. So with the additional 40% off, they were $13. But they are like, they're super cute.
Wow.
Yes, I was so excited because
did you find multiples of those, like one for you, one to sell?
No, I wish. Well, I was still trying to be like, I was kind of, usually when I go to Nordstrom Rack, I'll stay for like probably like 2 or 3 hours. But I think the line was pretty long, so maybe about 30 minutes in line. But we still ended up staying 2 hours. But I was trying to still, even though I had masks on, it still was just like a lot of people, so I was kind of nervous. So I was like, let me just be very specific with what I'm looking at. So I did look at the denim. But it's just like, because usually they'll have it just bottoms, dresses, and tops. But they had it like activewear, shorts, pants, skirts, coats, scarves, dresses, and like all the racks were full. So I don't know. I'm assuming they must have just a whole bunch of inventory to sell. Yes, I would definitely, like, I don't want to like push you, but I definitely encourage you, because it was, and the prices were, like, they were just really good. I did find a Love Shack fancy dress, and it's velvet, but it's still cute. But with the 40% off, it ended up being $35.99, and I think it's like a $500 dress.
Yeah, oh, that's so worth it.
That's totally so worth it. Yes. TJ Maxx, I had a Love Shack fancy dress, and I was walking around the store. The price tag on it was $700. But TJ's had it for $149. And then I'm like, Lori, put it down. $149 is way too expensive. But then I'm like, but it's retail for $7. Like, I was going, yeah. I mean, I didn't think too much, but $35 for Love Shack fancy. That is exciting.
I was so happy. I really was.
That is so exciting. I will say, since you live in the South, Jessica, I just with the heat recently, we've had a heat wave around here. And for the first time, I'm having to wear my mask in the heat and I'm dying. Like, it's a totally different experience. And then I thought to myself, I can't imagine like being somewhere where it's been hot since we've been in shelter in place since like March, and people have been dealing with this since the word, like since the beginning, because things are actually starting to loosen up around here. And it's still like it changes my whole experience when I'm out.
Yes, I'm very particular. Like, I have, I'm really big on icy, so I go to the gas station every day. And even then, I still put my mask on. But besides going to the gas station and to the grocery store, I really have just been staying at home. And I didn't really think about it, because I do see people out without masks, and I just get so annoyed. So I'm like, who do you think you are? Yeah, I guess maybe that's why they're not wearing it, because of the heat. But still, and yeah, now it has been a little... Yeah, and I wear glasses too, so sometimes, of course, when I'm
me too. Me too, my friend. They just fog up the whole time.
Oh, that's what my husband was saying. That's been his complaint. So he like pinches the thing on his nose so it doesn't fog up quite as bit. Okay, see what I was saying, Jessica? We just go
in a million directions.
No, it's okay.
No, we go off. So
it's okay. I'm super introverted, but I've been like locked down forever, so the conversation is much needed.
Oh, good. Well, gosh.
Just talking out loud to somebody.
It's so nice. I'm so happy you're on here. So I just want to back up a little bit and talk about why, of all people, like, I was just kind of glued to your stories, Jessica. So I think that, you know, during the time post George Floyd, things kind of froze for a lot of us. And it was kind of still, we were still in the middle of COVID. And then this happened. And, it's actually pretty exciting to me to see that there's this like resurgence of a civil rights movement. I feel like change is happening. Do you feel that way, Jessica? I feel like it's happening. I feel like we're living through. I'm hoping that we're going in that direction. But I will also say that I probably wasn't as verbal about what was going on, because I was kind of taking it all in. And to be really blunt and honest, I was like, I don't really know what this white girl can contribute to this conversation. Like, I found myself appreciating what everybody was saying, and, you know, Blackout Tuesday, I was okay with, but I was like, it was a lot of stuff on social media, like everywhere you went, but it started to get to be like white noise to me because it was everywhere. But for whatever reason on your stories, I just felt like you were being like, you were really sending a strong message without being negative. And just like, I felt like there was hope in everything you said, but you also like set people straight as well. You know, I don't know. It just gave me perspective. And it took me a while to like work up the nerve to even ask you to be on the podcast, because I feel like there's a lot of awkward conversation on my end. Like, I don't want to say the wrong thing. Like, before we got onto the podcast, I asked Jessica, like, would you like to be called a woman of color, or would you like to be called a Black woman? Because as a white woman, I get awkward around that stuff and I want to say the right thing. So forgive me if I have like, if I say the wrong thing on the show. I just really want you to talk to us about what we can do to be helpful, or what, you know, what your expectation is or what your hope is for the future here. And I don't know, I'm going to stop talking because I want to put the floor over to you and tell us a little bit about, are you full-time, part-time reseller? How long have you been reselling, and kind of the message and why you're here to chat with us a little bit, Jessica?
Oh, well, first, thank you so much, because I just feel like, I'm just one little person in the world. But I started reselling. Every time I tell this story, it kind of surprises me, and as much I'm sure it surprises other people. But I graduated college in 2013. But with my college, it's pretty small. And so I didn't actually get my degree until 2014. I finished in the fall of 13, and spring of 14 is when I got my degree in mathematics, which I really don't like. Besides being a teacher, there's not that much you can do with that, and I'm not interested in teaching, so I didn't really know where I wanted to go. And then a friend of mine from high school, he like made a tweet on Twitter. I was like saying, does anybody need a job at a bank? So I ended up applying for the job, even though I never wanted to work at a bank, because I'm paranoid about a lot of things, and I was always scared about getting robbed, which didn't happen while I was there, but like that was always in the back of my mind. So I was like, I don't want to work there, but I wasn't working. So then I applied there. I worked there for about 2 years. And then, I don't know, I turned 25 and I was like, yeah, this isn't really where I want to go with life. I was still living at home with my mom, my aunt, my uncle. And then I was just like, okay, I'll figure something out. I was like, but I don't really like what I'm doing. So I quit my job in November of 2016. And then I had already had my Instagram account for couponing, because me and my mom a few years before then had got super into couponing. And so I didn't want to flood my personal Instagram with that. So I was like, okay, I'll make a second Instagram. Excuse me. So I'm at home for a month or so, just binging a whole bunch of TV on Netflix and Hulu. And I was on the Instagram, and this one lady I followed, she was a couponer. And she posted somebody in the reselling community. I had never even heard of the word reselling. I didn't know what it was or anything about that. So she had mentioned John at Travel and Thrift. And so I went to his page, and then he was shouted the Posh Hanger and Nicole State and Cindy had Amazing Taste. And so then this was in January of 2017. So I started clicking, and I was like, I don't know. It was just almost a whole new world, literally was open. And I was like, what? My aunt has bought a few things on Craigslist, but I never thought about selling stuff in general. And I never definitely not thought about selling stuff as a living. So then of course I see the hashtag. So I go back on the reselling community. And then a lot of times people are just shouting out different people. And so I'm going through people's Instagram profiles. I'm looking at stuff on YouTube. And then I want to say, so I signed up for Poshmark, I think January 25th. I hadn't seen a commercial for Poshmark, hadn't seen it on Facebook, nothing like that. Signed up for Poshmark January 25th. I don't remember when I signed up for eBay, but I think the same day. And then I made eBay store on February 14th of 2017. And then since then, it's just been a huge learning experience. I never would have thought this is where I would be in life.
So you're doing this full time.
Yeah. And so I was like, so when I first did it, I was like, oh, well, I'll just do it right now full time until I find something else to do. And I kept saying until I find something else. But I'm really, honestly, I'm really lazy. I don't like updating my resume. I don't like job searching. I don't like none of that stuff appeals to me. I just kind of, I guess, I don't know, maybe because I'm a millennial, I kind of want it to fall out of the sky. But I was like, well, if nothing comes across my path, I'm not going to look for it. And so I just kept doing this. And I do remember going to a Plato's Closet. They were having a 70% off sale, and I found some clothes then, and my pictures from back then they're embarrassing.
All of our pictures from the beginning, right? Are embarrassing.
It's so bad. I love looking back. Yes, I got this tapestry from Five Below, I think, same in the store. I got this colorful tapestry. I had this wrinkled pale pink Forever 21 maxi dress. You can't even see the full dress in the picture. It's so bad. That was my first sold listing on Poshmark. And then there's the thrift store that was local to me, where each month they have 99-cent tags. And so I remember going there and getting 70 or 80 items, because I still didn't know what I was doing. So to me, I got J. Crew, Banana Republic, Ann Taylor, and Talbots. I'm like, oh my God, I'm hot stuff. I'm getting super expensive brands at 99 cents. And then I'm doing 99-cent auctions, and most them are selling at like 99 cents or $1.99.
Because you were
doing, so I always tell people, yeah, I was doing auction because I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to ship. I didn't know how to package things. Nothing. Like I still remember, like I can see it. Like I had a package in a priority box, and I had the first class label printed out because I didn't have.
I've done that.
Yes. And so I walked up, and the lady, she was like, "Ma'am, you can't do that." I'm like, "What do you mean?" She was like, "You can't do that." That's why I tell people, like, there's nothing you can tell me, like, that's embarrassing. People's like, "I don't know where to start." I'm like, neither did I. Like, you can't, I can kind of tell you what to do, but you just have to make the mistakes. Because the only way I learned how to ship was shipping incorrectly.
Correct.
Like, yeah.
But also, just to interrupt you for a second, Jessica, this is 2017. I compare even what's accessible, like, video-wise, to when I started in 2018, and I feel like it has, like, exploded, like, what's available for content. So even if you started in 2017, yes, Nicole State was out, and maybe, I don't even know if Empty Hanger was out at that point, but, like, I do feel like you probably had, you had less resources in 2017, even just 3 years ago compared to now. I feel like there are so many reselling videos.
Yeah, there's so much information out now. And then, like, I'm the type who I do like to learn on my own, but also like I said, that Instagram was for couponing. And so like this had become like a really big, I wouldn't say an issue, but like people will kind of ask like experienced couponers, like how to coupon. And it was always like a no, you don't ask. So I never wanted somebody to call me out in the reselling community. So I never would ask questions. I would just be on Instagram all day, 'cause I was so scared of people being like me, like you need to figure out for yourself. So I would just be on Instagram most of the day and like trying to take notes and just like absorb all the information, because I was like, I don't want anybody to be like, you need to learn on your own. Like I was kind of scared to get my feelings hurt. So I was like, I'll just keep figuring it out until.
Well, yeah, it's a good way. It's a good way to be resourceful, because sometimes people ask questions and I'm happy to answer questions, but a lot of the answers are out there now if you dig a little bit. So
yes,
you were definitely resourceful. Yeah.
I was, and I do remember seeing sometimes like people who have been doing this for years being like, yeah, people only last 2 years and this and that. And I was like, I don't know, it was kind of welcoming, but it was also kind of, because I feel like the couponing community was kind of having that same thing too, to where I think, because at one point it was becoming like, couponing had become like this huge thing, especially after Extreme Couponing, like the show on TLC. And so I guess people kind of felt like their little world was being exposed or infiltrated. So I almost kind of wanted to like hoard the information. And so when I joined the reselling community, I was kind of getting that same vibe as well. Like, we were here first, you need to figure it out on your own. And if you don't, oh, well, you weren't cut out for it.
Do you feel like there's been a shift in the way the community responds to one another now?
Yeah, because I think there's so many like newer people, well, what I consider new, like, mm-hmm. I guess the people who I've seen will come after me. And I think that has, I guess like with any other thing, like you have a wave and then like a big wave and then people die out from it and then new people come in. So I do think it's more accepting now. And like you said, there's so much information out there that I feel like the wealth of information out there makes people more comfortable with talking about things since it's already out there. So you don't feel like, oh, I'm the one giving away this quote-unquote
like
secret.
Trade secrets. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that I still avoid talking about when it happens is retail arbitrage. Like I don't always do like a haul with retail arbitrage because I feel like everybody else is shopping at Nordstrom Rack or at TJ Maxx. And that's the one thing, it's almost like you don't want to blow someone's cover if they just bought a wave of, you know, rag and bone jeans that they're going to list. And then everybody, you know, I feel like even the yellow tag sale at TJ's has been watered down a little bit because of the reselling community, because it's all hyped up now. So it clears out so fast.
So yes, I feel too. Yeah.
I was just going to say, talking about the yellow tag sale, it's funny that you mentioned that, because when I was in TJ Maxx last week, I was actually buying stuff for myself. I was not buying reselling stuff. And one thing that I purchased was a red tag, and I had just kind of, the cashier is super nice and we were talking, and I said to her, I said, even for a red tag price, like this is still kind of expensive. And she was like, yeah, they're starting to move away from yellow tag because of resellers. So it will be interesting to see what happens going forward. But when she said to me, I was like, oh, really? Like, you know, obviously playing dumb. And she was like, yeah, you know, there's been a lot of talk about that. And we're trying not to let items get to the yellow tag phase anymore and have it just stay at the red tag phase. So I don't know if that's just something around here or what, but I was like, oh, okay. I don't really do the yellow tag sale anyway, so it really doesn't affect me, but I thought that was interesting.
It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, Jessica, I'm sorry. Continue.
No, it's okay. No, I like back and forth conversation. I get tired of hearing myself talk. Like I get obnoxious after a while. But yeah, I agree with that too about, because I don't want people to think that I think that you should tell everything about your business, because I absolutely don't think that. And I do think now, you asked me if I think that's changed. I do. And I feel like it's kind of like the pendulum swung from nobody saying anything to now people telling everything. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to find a balance. And like a lot of that stuff is coming back to bite us in the butt. And like, I guess I was saying specifically more about ThredUp and their Luxe program. Mm-hmm. So I remember when the Luxe program came out and it was like almost you kind of be invited to it. And I have been using ThredUp just to send like those items that I would get for 99 cents that I didn't know back then weren't good, because I didn't know anything about looking up sold or anything. I just went off of what I knew, which were mall brands, which to me was like Anthropology and stuff like that. I was like, yeah, because me, even now, even still, Anthropology to me is crazy expensive.
It is.
So I was just buying, stuff like that. So then, so I was sending things to ThredUp. So I kind of had like, I guess, history with them. So I did get an email about joining the Luxe program, which I accepted. But then it became where you could request labels, which you can still do that now. And I remember all the YouTube videos being like, oh yeah, you know, I'll ask for a Luxe label, because you know, Luxe should be Luxe items. And I never tried to abuse, like I'm not judging anybody that did this, but I didn't do it because I don't know, my mind is so like paranoid, analytical.
You're a rule follower.
Kind of, yeah. But
she's
like,
a math major. So analytics.
Yeah, it's very black and white. Yeah. I look at things very, there's not much gray area. And so I was like, well, I don't want them to start taking less things from our regular boxes because I'm abusing the Luxe system. Even I know different people process your boxes and stuff. I just want, I guess, my account to be flagged as somebody who wasn't really sending in a lot of Luxe items in the Luxe box. So I really tried to stick with sending Luxe items in. I do remember seeing some YouTube videos where people were like, yeah, because with the Luxe items, they do get processed faster. And the payout is better, and they'll send your stuff back for free. Because like, if you want your stuff back from ThredUp, just the regular program, you have to pay $10.99. So people were kind of trying to skirt the system. And then I remember about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, ThredUp putting out an announcement that if you send in like items with their Luxe label, they have to be the box has to be majority Luxe.
Yep.
I saw that. Because it used to just be one item.
Yeah, at least one. Yeah, and now I was like, it's just so hard. Like, I understand that we do want to be helpful, like, you know, to people, because it's a place, like, this is a community or just an occupation, you don't know where to start, and it can be very scary. But then I do feel like we've almost kind of been like an overload of information, too much information, and then like companies are picking up on stuff like that. So it is hard to keep that balance.
I agree, Jess. That's a really interesting perspective, and one to keep in mind as a content creator, having a podcast, having YouTube, you know, how much should we be sharing? You know, there are people that don't share their cost of goods. There are people that obviously, I think one of the hot things right now is pallets, and you know, people aren't going to share where they're getting their pallets from. And I completely respect that, you know, and we've always said, you know, Walmart doesn't tell Nordstrom where they get stuff, you know, like it's just, but it's interesting because we have this culture of sharing. So yeah, how much is too much and how much will it affect our business moving forward? It's an interesting perspective.
Well, I think we're starting to see the shift too, where you're seeing retailers join forces with ThredUp. So they're listening, they're watching. It's just interesting to see where it'll go in the future and what it'll mean for resellers that are doing this full time.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever going to be a time as a reseller where we can chill out, because I just feel like it changes every day. Like right now, like you were saying, Daniela, we're dealing with high prices at the thrift store. So what do we do? So we're thrifting online, maybe more yard sales, porch pickups. Yep. Your own closet. You know, we are always evolving. And Jessica, I did want to make one point because you said you were lazy about getting jobs and stuff. And I've said this before because I used to consider myself a lazy, well, not lazy, but I wasn't like very career minded. And my man, Gary V, who I love, I don't know if you're familiar with Gary V, but he's a very untraditional businessman, entrepreneur. And one of the things he said is, you're not lazy. You just haven't found what you love to do yet. Because yep. I bet you're not lazy with reselling, right?
No, I had. And like, it was crazy because to me, I don't, reselling is not, it's not a bad thing, but it's not like, I guess if you were to ask, if I knew what it was growing up, I wouldn't put down, oh, I want to be a reseller when I grow up. Like, I always had, I guess, maybe bigger aspirations. But like, I kind of knew I was doing the right thing because like my mom, she helps me out a lot. Like, we don't live together anymore now. But even like when we were living together, she helped me source. And even now, sometimes she'll find things. And she's actually even gotten onto my car herself. Well, she'd be like, she had been saying the past couple years, like, I'm so glad you found something you like to do. I'm so proud of you. And like, I wasn't like a bad kid, but I never really heard her say those words. So I was like, okay, like, I don't need to be so concerned about, I guess, what I look like what my job looks like on paper, as long as I'm, you know, having enough money to support myself, what I need to support.
Oh, that's so nice. And legal. It means a lot coming from your mom too, to kind of get that approval or just her blessing, more or less, you know, to validate what you were doing.
Yeah. Cause it does feel, cause yeah, I would feel like I have to almost explain myself. So it sounds, you know, it sounds weird. And then I guess to me also, I guess being what people will consider smart, I guess, like, I don't want to put that down to myself, but people always, I guess, just looked at to me as being smart. And so I feel like saying, yeah, I don't have a job, I just sell stuff online, it sounds like weird. And so I was like, yeah, I don't care what people think anymore, especially now. Like, now, especially even people younger than me, like my ancestors too, like people my age and younger, they really aren't into 9 to 5, which is nothing wrong with 9 to 5, like, it's so stable and health insurance and all that. But I feel like there is like this new wave of people looking for different ways to make income.
I was just going to say that I don't think reselling is such a novelty thing anymore. I think so many people dabble in it now across all the age groups that it's becoming more of a norm than it ever was before.
Yes.
And but to your point about the 9 to 5, yeah, my son who's 21, he's like, Mom, the thought of being at a desk all day, like, actually terrifies me. And he's very hardworking. He's a millennial, and he just wants, I don't know, is he 21 or is that the neck? Is that beyond?
That would be Gen Z. I don't know. I know I'm millennial. I'm like the
Gen Z.
Yeah, that's Gen Z. But yeah. It is a non-traditional thing. But I also want to say, Jessica, about being a smart math, or I should say smart, because I'm from Boston.
A wicked smart
math person. I think it's phenomenal to have that side of your brain be high performing when you're a reseller, because I'm strong in math, but I'm not like an analytical person. So, you know, bookkeeping, organization, inventory, like a lot of that part of the business I struggle with. And I always feel like people who are good at that to begin with, I feel like that is such a bonus. If you're doing that, if you're a reseller who also is that side of the brain developed. Does that make sense?
No, actually it isn't, because I don't have any legit bookkeeping. And I was talking about that the other day too. I need to do my taxes. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't, like, my receipts is all over the place. I'm currently in my, the other bedroom, because I live with my dad now. Stuff is all over the place. I wish I had that side. And it's not, it's like, in everything else in life, I do have that, but like where I should have it the most, it's not there. But I will say working at the bank has definitely prepared me like financially, or be more financially literate. So like, that's not something we learn about in school. And it's definitely like money isn't really talked about, in my opinion, in the Black community. Mm-hmm. And so when I was at the bank, I just learned so much information. Like I had a checking account and I had a savings account, but like that's kind of like the gist of it. But I didn't really know just how it all worked. So I started like another savings account while I was there. I hadn't even heard of like an IRA or a Roth IRA or anything like that. And just being in that atmosphere for 2 years, I had learned so much about money. And I don't understand why we don't talk about money more, especially as women and as Black people. It's just like, money's not a taboo thing, and we need to be so much more financially literate than what we are.
I feel like personal finance, like my son Anthony took it in high school and my daughter took it, but it is an elective. And I'm like, how is that
right?
Not a mandatory class? Like, you should all be taking personal finance. I should take a personal finance class. I clearly never took it. But yeah, so that's interesting. So what, I don't know if I caught the transition from working at the bank, Jessica, to reselling.
I quit. I think my last day was November 4th, 2016. I just said I wasn't happy. And I wasn't a place, like, I always say, like, if you're not happy with something, you shouldn't do it. But also, like, I have to realize I was at a place where I still lived at home. So of course, like, I was able to quit. Like, I don't think you should quit your job when you have people relying on you, no matter right. how unhappy you are. But I was like, yeah, I'm just not really feeling this. And so I just said, I'll wait and figure out something. So November came, like I said, I was watching like a whole bunch of Netflix and like Hulu. And then December came. And then I was going to actually, I remember I was going to take a state test so I could like possibly get a job with the state. You had to kind of take these tests before you can even apply for some of the jobs. And I had set an alarm one day to like wake up early and go downtown. And I didn't end up going. And I was like, whatever. And then sometime in January is just when I just happened to see that lady I was talking about posted
out on reselling. Right. All right.
And so, I just like dove into it, which is, I've never done anything like that before either. Just like,
yeah, just kind of around the clock. It's the first thing you think about when you wake up, the last thing before bed.
Yeah. And like, I was just, I never, yeah, that's exactly what it was. And like, I've started, which I still have, I started like a personal bullet list and notes. Because like I said, at that time, even if I was scared to ask, there were people who were still just mentioning stuff, and it was just brands I had never heard of. And even now, I still don't really hear about them in like mainstream culture. I'll just hear about them in the reselling community.
Mm-hmm. Right. Things that will flip for a lot.
Yeah. But also Louisiana is so behind, like when it comes to fashion and stuff.
Are you near a city?
Yes. Growing up, I was a little near the capital, kind of near the capital. Like, growing up, it was like, it's 30 minutes away. So back then it seemed so far away. So it was really, it wasn't often I would go into like city, which is Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. But if we do get something, it comes to New Orleans. So we just got, H&M came here maybe 5 years ago, maybe at the earliest, the latest. And then yes. And then Zara, we just got a Zara. I think last year is when it opened up, or the year before. Like, fashion here is just so, it's really behind.
Even
like,
in
not just fashion, it's anything. Yes, like yeah. It's really, I wouldn't really call any part of us the fashion capital. So like,
yeah,
I didn't know about Lululemon until recently. I had never heard of that name.
Oh, that's interesting. I went to New Orleans right when they reopened after Katrina. It was the best trip ever. One of my friends turned 40 and we went down there, and it was really interesting because a lot of the surrounding air, we went golfing one day, which I'd never been golfing. I haven't been since, but we went, and like the neighborhoods, you could see all of the aftermath of Katrina, and they had just reopened hotels. So we got like a great deal because they wanted tourists to come back and give back to the community. But what an awesome city. I had so much fun. And then my son applied to Tulane. And he got into Tulane, but he didn't get any money. So he ended up going to Penn State, but loved the recruiter there. And everybody we know who goes to Tulane absolutely loves it.
Yeah, Tulane is expensive.
Oh, my God. It was like ridiculous.
I went to a college down here, which is Xavier, which is a historically Black college. And it's a private college, so it was pretty expensive as well. And still paying off student loans from that.
Yes, the student loans things. Daniela is working hard to pay her student loan. Didn't you just pay one off, Daniela?
I paid off my undergraduate, but my graduate loan isn't going anywhere anytime soon. That thing's going to be around for at least 30 years, so that'll be fun. My goal is to pay it off within the next 15, but, you know, between that and saving for a house, you know, something's got to give. But that graduate loan kills me. Kills me. It's a lot. Very fortunate and very happy for the education that I have and the opportunities that I had. However, the repayment process is tough.
Interesting. Yeah. Crazy. Jessica, talk a little bit about college. Was it, were you debating between a few colleges? Did you know that you wanted to go to a primarily Black college?
No, I didn't actually. Again, I wouldn't call it lazy. I'm just a very big procrastinator. Mm-hmm. I'd always been that way, but then like in the past year or so, I realized it was just because I was anxious and I'm like very, I guess, nervous about failure or unacceptance. Like that's why I drag my feet. Mm-hmm. So my middle school actually was like in the country, what I call the country. And then my mom moved us to Baton Rouge, the city, for high school because my middle school was very small. It was from fourth to eighth grade, 280 kids who had all known each other since we grew up together. Mm-hmm. And all of those kids went off to like the local high school, except for me and another friend. Our parents put us to other schools. And so that school was, honestly, it was half and half, but it was black and white. And that was it. Like I had never seen any other like color of people. And we had one Asian girl. Mm-hmm. And then, so like my graduating class of eighth grade was 50 people. And then my high school, the incoming freshman class was 400 kids. I was like, what? I was like, this is more kids than I had ever been around, like in just my whole middle school. I guess this is one grade. And that was, that school was, it's a magnet school. Mm-hmm. And so it was very hard to get in, not that hard, but there's a waiting list because it is a really good school and it's a public school, so you don't have to pay for it. So right. Like a lot of people really want to go there. And it was a really good school, it still is. But it was 50% black and 50% non-black. Well, that was the first time I'd been around like a lot of Indian people, mm-hmm. Asian people, like the culture, it was just crazy. It was so mixed. Like I had never been around like just different people besides black and white. And so then my best friend from high school, which she's still my best friend until today, she's a year older than me, and she wanted to be a pharmacist, which she is now. And Xavier has a college of pharmacy, mm-hmm. which is a really pretty, like, it's a really good college pharmacy. A lot of people want to go to it. So I remember she went to Xavier, and she came back home, because New Orleans and Baton Rouge are about, like, an hour and a half apart, depends on how fast you're driving, maybe, like, an hour and 10 minutes. So she came back home on a weekend, and she came over, and she was like, oh, my God. She was talking about how, like, how much she liked it and stuff like that. And so I was just like, I didn't really have anything in mind, honestly. I didn't know where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do with my life. And so I was like, okay, so Xavier, honestly, was the only place I applied to. And then I got in. And then when I went, I didn't think that much about it being black college. It didn't like cross my mind. It wasn't like the reason why I went, but I am glad that I did, because the experience, I will say, was like unlike anything else.
How so?
Well, the first time I didn't feel like a minority anywhere. And then like just going, and I guess like when we were talking about earlier, like growing up, my circle of friends in elementary, middle school were white. And mm-hmm. so we always like, they knew they were white. I knew I was black. And we were just like, we got along because we were friends and that was it. But then going to college, I didn't realize, I guess, just like how rich and different black culture is. And so even like just hair things, music, dressing, just different things. And then like even growing up, I was in like Beta Club, and which like a few of my friends, like, yeah, we were smart, but it wasn't like that many black people in Beta Club, so it almost always felt like kind of more like the exception, like, oh, you're that smart black girl. But mm-hmm. at Xavier, it doesn't define you. And I didn't have to worry about, because even me like going to there, like I know earlier we were talking about like biases and stuff. Like I had to like kind of change some of my ways of thinking, because it's like a liberal arts college and it's a Catholic college as well. So there's some class that we're required to take for our degree. So yep. We have to take like African American history classes and we have to take theology classes. So like I remember my sophomore year, I took an African American history class, and I remember my teacher, Dr. Doris, who's like one of probably the best teacher I've ever had. Tall, very tall guy, brown, bald head. And I was like, I assume he's like straight from Africa just by the way he looks, and he's from like a neighboring parish. And then my last semester I took another African-American history class, so like, I was kind of late for class that day, and I couldn't remember what room it was in. And so I look in and I see a white teacher. I'm like, what is he going to tell me about Africa? So I was like, this must be the wrong class. So I take my syllabus out of my backpack and I'm like, no, this is the right classroom. And then he actually, like, he was a white professor, but he had, when he was in college, I think he got into his senior year. I can't remember what his first major was, but he took a trip to Ghana his senior year, and then he came back and did, like, an African history, like, an African studies degree. And it was just crazy because I was like, so I remember my first thought was like, what can this white man tell me about Africa? And he taught me so much about the continent. Yeah, it was crazy.
One of my favorite classes that I took, one of my favorite courses, I should say, that I took when I was an undergraduate at Rhode Island College was my African studies class. And I'll never forget the teacher. He was amazing. His name was Obadiah, and he was from Nigeria. And the things that he taught me and the books that we read and the stories that he had was just, it was so eye-opening. And all of us thoroughly enjoyed just sitting in that class and just learning from him. Like, we could just sit there and talk about, like, his life experiences while he was in Nigeria and everything. And it was just really eye-opening at the young age of 19 years old to hear, you know, this man talk about African studies. And we would read all these different books that you would never find in Barnes and Noble. Like, it's just not something that you would find. And it was, I loved it. I wish I could take another, and I probably could if I wanted to take another course related to it. And maybe I will, I don't know. Maybe there's some online courses I could take that would bounce off of what I learned when I was in my undergraduate program, but I loved it.
That's great. And it's interesting to hear you say, Jessica, like, you know, what's this guy going to teach me in the irony. And that your first professor was from like a local parish, but you thought he was from Africa because he was brown. Yes.
He looks like what I assume. Yeah. And then that professor too, the second professor, which I can't remember his name, which I'm so sorry, but he really taught us so much. And he also made sure to like the way that we speak about it as well, to like make sure that we call it the continent of Africa because it has like over 60 countries. Yep. The first thing actually for his class he gave us a map of Africa, and we had to, like, this was hard, we had to learn every country and every city.
Oh my god, that's so, very difficult.
And so, it was, but the way I did it, I kind of color coded a little bit. So like, you fill it all out on the map, and then you have to take a quiz. Like, that was one of your quizzes you would take, and you could take it as many times as you needed. I only had to take it one time, but yeah, he just made it to where we can like realize what it was. And it was, I think maybe it was Africa and the world or something like that. And like, cause he even explained to us like what Afrocentric means. Cause we just thought it was like, oh, coming from Africa or just like about Africa. But he was like, no, Afrocentric is more about the continent of Africa and its like effect on the world and like how like different civilizations on the continent impacted other civilizations. Yeah, it was a really eye-opening class. And it was definitely one where I realized, yeah, I'm not a white person, but there's still different biases I might have myself about people that don't look like me.
I was just going to say that no matter what color our skin is or what our ethnicity or culture is, we all have these underlying biases that we don't even realize we have until we're confronted with something. And then we sit back and we're like, oh, well, I totally misjudged all of that, you know, and you'll just open up your mind to it all.
Well, yeah. And where you said that you came from a community that was, it was a smaller community, like in your earlier grade school, and it was black and white. But then, you know, this whole big world in college and all the, I guess, for lack of a better word, like the different types of black people, because obviously.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Right? You can say that's how I felt. It was so weird. Cause sometimes I regret like the feelings I had when I was younger, but I'm like, it's okay. I learned because, like each summer I was growing, cause like I said, where I live is about 30 minutes outside of the capital. Depends on like where you're going in the city, but where I live is really like the country, like across the street from my home, like where my mom and my aunt still live, is the Caneville. Like it's very, very rural. And so like a lot of people, like I went to middle school with, and like, going or not going to college doesn't determine like the kind of person you are. But like back then, even in middle school, it kind of was like, or like my friends who I went to middle school with, like the high school they went to, it was kind of like, oh, are you or are you not going to college? But at my high school, it wasn't like, are you going to college? It was, what college are you going to? Like, the difference in perspective were just different, too.
The expectations were different.
Yeah, the expectation. Yeah, because I remember mom even tells me, like, I remember her telling me a lot, like, when they were growing up, like, in high school, she said that they would, like, with the black kids, they would come and, like, tell them, like, she's like, they didn't tell them about college. They would tell them about different trade schools and stuff to go to. And, like, the white kids were, like, the ones who were being told about going to college and stuff. Mm. Because my oldest cousin is actually the first person like in our family to go to college.
So do you think that because you were like a smart kid, that was the path you were on because you were bright, but that wasn't the expectation for most people in your community or just for Black people in general in your community. But you were like identified at a young age as like a bright kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do remember taking the gifted test in second grade. I didn't get into it, but I do remember taking that. And like I said, because I always felt like it did feel like just different, like being the quote unquote smart Black kid. Mm-hmm. But there's another college here too, which is the largest HBCU in the United States, Southern. It's like, it's really big for their band. Like it goes by the Human Jukebox. And they're also really big. Southern is big. They're known for their law school, their nursing school, and their engineering program. And so this bus driver I had when I was in middle school, she had asked me, she was like, what's your GPA? And like my middle school, it was easy. Like it wasn't that hard. And I was like a 4.0. And she's like, oh, you should like apply to go to the summer program. So this was the program at Southern, which like I said, is the HBCU as well. And it was this engineering summer program. And that was the summer before my sixth grade. And that was the first time I had been around all Black people as well. And it was the first time I was like, I realized like, oh, it's normal for Black people to be smart. Because like the people, even the kids I went to school with, they weren't dumb. It's just they weren't really given the same expectations as like other people.
Well, and I think that speaks a lot to just the general perception, I guess, like that a smart Black girl is an exception and not the rule.
Yeah,
why do we feel that way? Why did you feel that way?
I don't know. And it's crazy because like I said, even back then, this was the 2000s. So race wasn't a huge issue or wasn't like really talked about as much. Or like he doesn't think it's like we all had like I said, looking back, I realized we all had our own inherent biases. And like I'll tell this story a lot, and like I'm sure people like get tired of me hearing it, but like, this is one like that just stuck with me. So with Beta Club, I think we had to have like a 3.1 or something. So for the most part, it was like a few of us. We were all friends, but I was I think the only Black girl, and my friend Whitney. And I remember like my best friend, like this girl who's my best friend, we had going to the nursing home to do like I think to sing for Christmas or something, and we were all hanging out like in that area. It's like this river called False River, so we're all hanging out and sitting on the docks or whatever. And my friend, and she was like, "How come you're so smart? Black people aren't supposed to be smart." And I was like, "I don't know," because I didn't know what to say to that. I'm like, I don't know. So yeah, I just said I don't know, and so like that always sticks with me because I'm like it's just weird. So I always felt like. Yeah, like it wasn't normal for Black people to be, you know, quote unquote smart. And so, cause like a lot of the Black kids I'm thinking about like growing back up, they weren't in Beta Club. And it is like, it's a Black and white issue for sure. But I think it's also a regional issue because even a lot of the white kids I went to school with, like I grew up with, they didn't go to college either. It's just like, we're so, I don't know, it was just a very rural area. And like college just seemed like such a big.
Well, it's interesting to hear you say that too. Yeah. One of the things that I struggle with, Jessica, is like somebody I was watching about, I think I was watching, do you know Twitch and Allison?
Mm-hmm.
Dancer Twitch.
Yeah.
So you think you can dance? Well, they did this thing on Instagram and it was like, put a finger down if, you know, someone's ever clutched their purse when you walk by, and Twitch put a finger down, like, put a finger down if you've been pulled over because of the color of your skin, and Twitch put a finger down, and his wife is white, and like
she did not
put a finger down for 10 questions until it was put a finger down if you feared for your child because they are Black. And then that was like the one finger she put down, and it was very powerful. And one of the things was put a finger down if somebody has moved away from you when you got on an elevator or something like that. And then I challenged myself, like, so this is what I struggle with as a white person. Like, so if a man gets on an elevator with me, just depending on the look in his eye or how I feel, like my, you know, when you trust your gut, sometimes I'm comfortable with it and sometimes I'm not. And for real, it doesn't necessarily matter if he's Black or white. There could be a white guy that really gives me a skeevy vibe and I will get off the elevator. And there could be a Black guy that makes eye contact with me and smiles and he gets on and we have a conversation and I'm fine. But I always feel self-conscious, like, well, if there was a Black guy who got on the elevator and made me feel uncomfortable and I got off the elevator, is he only going to see me as, well, she's racist and that's why she's getting off? Or is it more like, you're a big guy and I'm a woman and I feel uncomfortable being in an elevator alone with a man? It has nothing to do with the color of your skin, but I feel like the perception is that it's always about race, even when it's not. You know what I mean? And I struggle with that a little bit, and I want to like to do the right thing. This is actually a funny story, and this is a true story. My mother-in-law was at the casino in Connecticut. And I don't know if you're familiar with baseball, Jessica, but do you know who Big Poppy is? David Ortiz?
I've heard that name, but I don't know who that is.
All right. Well, he's like a legend in Boston. And if you're like a baseball fan, he's from the Dominican Republic. And big, handsome black guy, love him so much. And my mother-in-law got on the elevator at a casino, and Big Poppy walked on with three of his bodyguards, but she was alone on the elevator. And she said she was frightened that she got, because there were these three big black guys that got on the elevator with her, and they were staring at her, and she was like looking at the ground, and she said she was nervous because she was alone. And then they busted out laughing, and then they said, "Do you have any idea who this is?" And she's like, "No, I don't." And she was like quiet, and they said, "This is Big Poppy from the Red Sox." And she was like, "Oh my gosh, it's Big." But she like didn't even like, I think she was afraid to, she was like nervous. She felt like threatened on the elevator enclosed. And I'm like, wow, is that almost a missed opportunity? I'm like, I would have been jumping on him. But it's an interesting story, but there are a lot of questions around it all, you know, and I think it's really interesting to hear your perspective, which I had no idea before this conversation, just like, you know, where you grew up and then going to a college. So tell me a little bit about your magnet school. So you had to apply to get in. Was it specifically for math students? Was it like enrichment school?
It's just a magnet school. No, it's just a very good school. Maybe I guess it could be considered college prep, but we didn't have a football team. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can't remember the history exactly, but it used to be half white, half non-white. But I think it was 1969 is when they switched to half black, half non-black because of course affirmative action. Mm-hmm. And so they went. So like when I'm like, I don't know how it works in other states, but even like in the parish, like in East Baton Rouge Parish, depending on where you live, depends on where you went to high school. Mm-hmm. Like they would call it like your neighborhood school. But Baton Rouge is like Baton Rouge Magnet High School. It didn't matter where you lived in the parish, you go to the school. So we didn't technically have a district. So we didn't have a football team or a baseball team or anything like that. No cheerleaders, no basketball, no sports. It was very focused on
academics.
It was like, because my little cousin goes there now and I just feel so bad because like, she just looks rough all the time. And I'm like, and she's like, yeah, it is. And like, I forgot who said it, but I remember like, we said it before even in high school, like missing one day at our high school was like missing 3 days at another school. Cause it's so like fast paced
and
like
intense.
It was. And looking back, I'm like, looking back, I don't even know how, like I barely got out of high school. I think like a 2.5. Cause even then, so like that was a good wake up call too, because back in middle school, me and another best friend of mine, she ended up being like student of the year in eighth grade. Cause like we both were like super smart, always had like straight A's and stuff like that. And so I remember and she ended up being the valedictorian of like their class, which would have been my class if I had gone to high school with them. Mm-hmm. But I remember what this lady told my mom, and she was like, "Don't expect your child to go to Baton Rouge High and be the valedictorian." And I didn't really know what she said. So like that was like, so I went from being like the smartest kid in my grade or my school, like in our class, to being virtually a nobody. Cause some of these kids like came in, like I was on course, like on regular course. So like it was ninth grade, I think it was algebra one, and like 10th grade is geometry, 11th grade is algebra two, and advanced calculus is your senior year. Like one of my friends was a freshman taking senior year math. There were a lot of freshmen taking 11th grade math, like 10th and 11th grade sciences. Like a lot of these kids had already come from magnet middle schools. And like were at my high school, and some of them like I didn't even know this was possible, but some of those kids had like four, like who I graduated with had like 4.5 and 4.6 GPAs. Mm-hmm. Because like with honor courses, your grades so like I was just glad to graduate because you have to keep a 2.5 to stay at the school, because if not you get kicked out. I was just glad honestly to like keep a 2.5 to like a 2.9 all throughout high school, because it was that intense.
Well, that
because
you just like crumbling. From like being such a big
extremely
yes. bond, right. But then it prepared you for college, and it sounds like it gave you a pretty strong foundation. I wish my son focused a little bit more on academics and less on sports sometimes, to be honest. I wish it was more of a focus. Sometimes I think the sports is like an overfocus, but that's like a different subject for a different day.
This episode is sponsored by SaveTheChildren.org. Save the Children believes every child deserves a future. In the United States and around the world, we work every day to give children a healthy start in life, the opportunity to learn, and protection from harm. We deliver lasting results for millions of children, including those hardest to reach. We do whatever it takes for children, every day, and in times of crisis, transforming their lives and the future we share. Right now, the coronavirus is the biggest global health crisis of our lifetime and threatens children in every way. COVID-19 has already left many children without caregivers, out of school, and exposed to violence and exploitation. Child poverty is rising. With your support, we can help children in unsafe households and help support distance learning in the face of school closures. Here are some ways your support can make a difference. $5 can provide a nutritious breakfast and lunch for a child who usually relies on school for food. $35 can provide educational toys and activities to engage eager, out-of-school learners. Whether it's $5 or $35, every contribution helps the children. For more information, go to SaveTheChildren.org/SaveKids or www.SaveTheChildren.org/SaveKids. Thanks so much. Now back to the show.
So now let's fast forward. I feel like I could listen to the whole life story, but like, let's talk a little bit about like what's happening now and what you're feeling about the buzz with everybody, how your thoughts are on like white content creators and what people are sharing. Like, how are you feeling about everything right now? Post protests and everything. Well, I don't think we're post, where it seems to be a little bit quieting down as far as the protests go and the rallies. But I'm just curious about all the stuff you're posting, because that's what caught eye was your message.
Well, first I'll say my first two thoughts are like my first word, this is strange, and also what's so different now. So I guess last year, like, I was really excited about 2020, because I was like, ooh, 2020. I mean, it's like perfect vision. Like, I thought like 2020, I thought it was going to be different. I did kind of get annoyed too, even when like from the beginning of the year, from all like the Kobe Bryant tragedy, mm-hmm. and then COVID, and like people kept saying like 2020 is canceled. And I'm like, hold up. We don't know what 2020 like has in store for us yet. Like, y'all are canceling the year. It's not even over with. And so honestly, it's just really strange. Like, I talked to it with like some of my Black friends, and I'm just like, this is weird, because I still remember like vividly, like I said, I grew up like quote unquote colorblind, like color doesn't matter. I don't see color, like all that other foolishness that sounds good. It sounds good, but it really isn't good. Mm-hmm. So then, like, first time I really did realize that the difference between me and my friends who I grew up with was when the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case came, and like seeing some people, like, you know, these are my friends. I've slept to their houses and stuff like that. Like, people calling him a thug and this and that. And like, just like, I don't understand. That's the first time I realized it was like two different worlds. So I always thought we just lived in a world. So I think my family kind of too was kind of nervous for me growing up. I guess they thought maybe I didn't think I was Black or something. I don't know. But I think they're kind of like, you know, like she'll see like one day she doesn't live the same life her friends do. So then like, remember when the movement first started, like when people started saying Black Lives Matter. So, like, I remember I would post stuff and I would like be one of those people who's getting into like Facebook arguments, like this and that, explaining, you know, like my perspective on it, and just felt like nobody was listening, and like saying Black Lives Matter for forever. And then flash forward to 2020, because even some people I grew up with, like there's this one girl in particular, like I've started noticing her posts. She was very conservative, I guess you could say, growing up. And mm-hmm. see it, like, so I started seeing her post a lot of even like conservative like politics. I don't know why racism is a political issue, but whatever. So like, even her seeing some things she would post were very anti-Black, I would say. Like, it wouldn't be outright, but it still wasn't but like, so in the past year or so, she's been posting things where she's like finally understanding equality, because like, so even though we grew up very rural, she didn't grow up kind of privileged, so she didn't really, like, she was to me one of the people who didn't get it. So she started getting it, and like I would tell my mom when we talk, I'm like, it's so weird seeing people from back home who I would say Black Lives Matter, and they would be like, all lives matter. It's so weird seeing those same people finally, for whatever reason, understanding like what Black Lives Matter really means. It doesn't mean white lives don't matter, other lives don't matter. We're just saying we're the ones being, you know, being brutalized by police,
right,
at an extremely like disproportionate rate than other people. So right. Yeah, my first thing is just like, this is so weird. Like, I don't almost like Twilight Zone. I'm like, am I really living through what I think I'm living through? Weird.
I mean, I can see that because I feel like you've had these feelings straight through, right? But now I feel like it's a wake-up call for me and the Black Lives Matter. I mean, I remember when the football player, Kaepernick,
yeah. Oh, yes.
I mean, I could not believe the fuss over him kneeling. Like, I was just like, this doesn't make any sense that he's being demonized for this. I just couldn't get it. And now to think of what has happened now, I mean, he should be put on a pedestal now because like he was so peaceful about it, or not a pedestal, but I mean, I can't believe that he was ousted from the NFL for taking a knee to add light to the problem of police brutality. And yeah, I feel like I think our friend Leslie from A Reseller's Passion was like, this is, who's Black. She's like, this has been my life for 50 years. Like, I'm not going to stop working. Like you all have just had a light turned on, but this has been our life straight through. So welcome to the party, you know?
Yeah. Like, and I don't want to say that either, because it's like, I'm not trying to coddle white people or be, you know, fragile, or like, but I also don't want it to be like, I don't want to be dismissive of people waking up, because then it's just like, oh, well, they can be like, oh, I can just go back to the way I was, which that would still be on them. It's not my responsibility. But like I said, I just don't want to be dismissive. I am kind of like, what is so different about this time? Like I said, excuse me, I was telling my mom, it's just like, it's not just George Floyd, because it's me, Eric Garner, Mike Brown, Alton Sterling, who's like, was where I grew up in Baton Rouge. Now that was like, it hurts seeing Black people brutalized by the police on video, but like when it's in your own community, it's like it's a different level of hurt. And I was still working at the bank that time. And my bank honestly is very, the clientele is very conservative. Nobody said anything, but I can just kind of like, I don't know, that was another weird thing too, like working, I guess, in quote unquote corporate America. And I remember like, cause I try not to watch videos either, but I remember watching the videos of that particular one, like talking to it with another coworker of mine who was Black. And then like my aunt, she went to like a protest because that was pretty close to her job, actually, the gas station where he was gunned down. And it was just so, because it was just, it was just different, because it was just like, oh yeah, I know police brutality exists. Oh yeah, I know Black people are being like, you know, harassed by the police. But then it's like, but it's always was like, oh well, it's nobody around here, which I know, like, and even Louisiana just in general, just like the police to me are kind of like corrupt. But I was like, oh, you know, I still kind of fooled myself into thinking it wouldn't happen here. So then when it did, and so I was like, why wouldn't it happen here? Like, this is the South, this is the Deep South. People still have these ways of thinking. So like when it did, it was just very, like that was like a rough one. And so I was like, it's been filmed before, so I didn't understand what was so different about this one. But I think, cause you could see a video, especially even as Black people, I think at one point too, we were kind of getting like desensitized to it because it just happened so much. You just see the videos on Twitter and like it trends on Twitter for maybe a week or so, and then you just go back to regular life.
Like, I feel like it's a little bit like school shootings. Like, I can remember Columbine was like slow motion, and then the Connecticut one was also like over the top. But now they're so frequent that it's like it gets like a 30-second moment in the news, and then you move on. And I think a lot of the cases, like you're referring to, Jessica, that's what happened. Like, it was just everywhere. For me, I think that George Floyd's made a difference because it was like 8 minutes and 47 seconds or however long. And that it's, I think a lot of the other clips that we've seen have been like 10 seconds or whatever, but to actually, my husband watched it. I can't watch all.
Yeah, I don't watch it yet.
I can't watch it. But my husband has watched it, and he's like, it is so uncomfortable. And the whole like social experiment too, that there are all these people around and people were like shouting for him to stop or saying he couldn't breathe. And, you know, I guess one guy was like heckling the cop, like, I think you want this to happen. Like, you know, you're leaning in or whatever. And, but yet nobody, like he didn't stop. None of his coworkers stopped him. And I don't know if it was the length of time that really grabbed people's attention or if it was just the straw that broke the camel's back, you know?
Yeah, I think it was. And I think especially with COVID being hit, like, it's just, nothing is normal right now. So like, usually like life is normal and then like police brutality happens, so you keep going back to, you know, quote life as quote unquote normal, but nothing is normal. Like nobody's really working, you're not going anywhere, like nothing's open, you're like forced to stop and pay attention to what's going on. And even like I said, it's still just very staggering, because like one of my friends, she lives in upstate New York, she's a Black girl, and we were talking the other day and she's like, it's so weird, she's like, I'm driving through this white neighborhood and she's like, all of these houses have Black Lives Matter signs and one has a banner, she's like, we don't even have a Black Lives Matter sign in our yard, and she's like, it was just something she had never seen before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, because always has been, because I remember we were talking like before this, we were talking about Kerry Washington.
Yes.
And she's really who I like I didn't like the stuff I say on Instagram, like most of it is really not my word, it's just me like learning from other people, especially people like her. And so like I said, I always grew up thinking like colorblind, like, oh, I don't see color. And but I'm like, that's not like, she's the one who said like that's not the point, because people asked her if she wanted to, she was some interview, I couldn't find it, but they asked her if she wanted to live in a post-racial society. She's like, I'm not interested in living in a post-racial society. I'm interested in living in a post-racist society. Mm-hmm. She was like, I don't want you not to see my color. She's like, I want my skin color to not determine my trajectory in life. And like, that's mm-hmm. like what set the light bulb off. I'm like, yeah, I want you to see I'm Black. And like, call me Black. I'm not offended by the word Black. See that I am Black, just don't let that affect anything else or like how you treat me, just see it, but don't say like I don't see color, because that's just being ignorant, and at this point to me it's just being lazy.
Yeah, and I think people have the I think their heart is in the right place. I think I give people the benefit of the doubt when they say I don't see color, but it is lazy, like you said. Thinking about it, it's a little bit of a cop out. Like, well,
yes.
I don't mm-hmm. see color. Or the classic, like, oh, I have a great friend who's Black. You know, like I have a Black friend. Well, good for you. You know, like, that doesn't mean you're not racist or whatever. You know, so I don't know. Like, it's been. I feel like I have definitely paused, and I do believe that everything happens for a reason. So, you know, maybe COVID is here and it did make everybody really pause, and just we all have the benefit of time to reflect more than we usually do, like you said, and it's not like business as usual. So maybe this will be the catalyst for change that we need. I pray that it is. I know, I mean, I have a long way to go, and I don't know. I've actually been somewhat fascinated by it and very humbled by it, and, you know, started to follow a lot more Black content creators who are fantastic. And when I thought about it, like, there's like a handful of people prior to this who I followed, and I didn't think in terms of color, but there was this one woman from a yoga studio who I took a class with her, and I was like mesmerized by her, and I've been following her for a while. And then there's Oprah, and there was you, Jessica, and my friend Leslie, but like, there just haven't been a lot. And so now like all of these these Black influencers have been in the limelight, and I've been following them, and I almost feel guilty that I didn't seek them out before now, you know? It's weird. It's like, you know, you buy a red car and then you notice all the red cars on the road.
Yeah.
I feel like it's popping up more, or just like you said, like it's a conversation that people have been having for a very long time, but I've just been kind of tuned out.
Yeah, and I agree. I 100% agree. And I did tell my mom that a couple of weeks ago, because I don't know if I consider myself a religious person, but I do consider myself a spiritual person, and I definitely identify as Christian. And so I was like, I am like absolutely sorry that we've lost like over 100,000 people to COVID. And I was like, but I really do think like that's like, we just need a global pandemic for us to stop and to finally address like America's racial indiscretion. Just like I was, because there would have been nothing else that could have happened to make us stop. And because like even
it was really like the perfect storm.
And I was just like, and I hate that there have been other, you know, Black people killed by the police. I hate that George Floyd had to be like I just consider like Black people like involuntary martyrs for the cause, because like they mm-hmm. didn't, George Floyd didn't die so we can do this for him. Like he had no say so in it. So I was like, I hate that, but I really do think coronavirus is what stopped. So I was like, please, because I know everybody's like epidemiologists and virologists are like talking about a second wave. I'm like, please, can we just like listen to God right now and just like and like let coronavirus help us like focus on what we need to focus on, because I cannot take a second wave of this again, because it's just like going to be destruction for like people's mental health, the economy, real health. Like, I don't want anybody to die anymore. I'm like, can we just get rid of
I know.
Like, okay, coronavirus woke us up. We don't need it anymore.
I know. I'm really hoping it goes in that direction. Danielle, are you still with us, love?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm just listening. I'm taking it in.
Yeah, no, it's a lot to take in. And Jessica, like, this like exceeded my expectation, because it's just been really nice to hear. And I know this is just a very small part of your story, but I really appreciate you sharing it with us on the podcast. And I want to continue to follow you and just, I don't know, learn from you. And we learn from each other, right? And it's interesting to hear you say how you didn't know that you were Black when you were little, almost. Like, that's an interesting thing to say, you know?
No, I kind of didn't. Yeah, my aunt brings that up. Well, she brought it up before. She hasn't brought it up in a while. But she said, like, this is one of my mom's youngest sister. Like, my mom is close. Like, we're all close. But, like, my aunt would kind of give me a lot. And then she said, too, she realized, like, kids didn't understand it. She said, like, when I was 4 or 5 or something. I think she wants to ask me. She asked me something, and, like, I guess I was like, okay, they're brown. And she asked me about white people, and I call them pink. And she was like, that's when she understood, like, kids really don't, they don't see color the way that adults see color. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah.
Which is so nice, right?
Right? Yeah, it is. And then you grow, yeah, me, yeah. And then you grow up, and you're like, oh, this is not what you expected the world to be. Especially mm-hmm. not as advanced as we are technologically.
Yes. It's actually an embarrassment, in my opinion.
Especially for the United States. Yeah, me too. Yeah. So I'm just like, I know the world is just looking at us and like, what are y'all doing over there? Like, you know,
I was talking to someone. It might have been one of my children. It might have been Angelina. I can't remember who it was. But they were, gosh, I wish I remembered who it was. But it was a Black person from another country. Like, I don't know if it was Europe, or I think it was a European person. And they said, oh no, it's different to be Black in Europe. Like, I'm not a Black American. I'm a Black European. That, like, America had this stigma of, like, you know, Black people being ignorant or less educated or whatever, that it was mm-hmm. even from country to country, like, so that the racism isn't as bad in other countries, or people didn't even want to identify as a Black person from America versus a Black person from Africa or Europe or something. You know, I don't remember. I don't want to like misquote it, but I thought that was interesting that they made the, you know, they drew the line
distinction, between yes.
the distinction. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For being a Black person in America. I'm like, gosh, that's terrible. Like, when I heard that, I'm
like that too.
That's awful. You know,
I agree with that too. Like, I know, like, yeah, I know the conversation getting long, but I do, like, I'm glad you brought that up, because I do feel that way sometimes. Like, this is just my personal feelings. I'm not speaking for any other Black American, but with True Parts, like, a lot of, so I've heard it said before, like, a lot of, like, Black people who grew up in America, they'll want to go visit a country in Africa, and I can't think of the word that they call it, but they pretty much call Black Americans a word that's equivalent to white, because they're like, oh, you're not from here, so you're, like, you're American, so you're white. And also, sometimes I do get this feeling, because, like, even in high school and in college, I was around different Black Americans, but also different Black people who are maybe, like, first generation American, like their parents came from Nigeria or something. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I see things, too, like, on Twitter, about a lot of people who were, like, who are connected to, like, their whatever country they come from in Africa, almost mocking Black Americans who don't know our history. It's like, but it's like, it's not our fault. We don't know where we come from. Like, all that was erased.
That's true.
And also, too, I know this controversial thing Samuel L. Jackson said a couple years ago about how a lot of Black British actors are coming over to the States. And he didn't really say taking roles from Black actors, but they are kind of playing a lot of important Black Americans, like Cynthia Erivo. She's British, and she came, and she's in the States now. She played Harriet Tubman. Mm-hmm. I know he has some people thought he was being divisive. I agree with it, because I do feel like, yeah, because the Black American experience is so unlike any other Black experience. And like, I'm not saying Black people from other places don't feel the same pain we do, but I do wish that like Harriet Tubman would have gone to someone that was more likely to be a direct descendant of an enslaved person, like Cynthia Erivo, who's a Black British person. Like, it's like it's already like the conversation is already complex when it's like Black and white, but then when you say like all the different types of Black, it's just, it's like you could honestly talk about every day, months.
Yeah, I feel like we are literally scratching the surface. But I mean, even just this, I mean, this is probably going to be a 2-hour podcast, but, you know, it's fascinating to me. And I have been pretty ignorant through the years, you know? So it's really interesting, Jessica. I thank you so much. Thank you so much for just sharing, being a part of the conversation. And maybe we should have you back and see in 6 months if anything has changed, or if, I don't know. It's just interesting how this has all played out. And I really appreciate you taking the time. And I know some people think that, oh, this is the reselling community. Why are you not talking about reselling? In fact, I did a video when a lot of people were not posting videos, which is everybody made their own decision. But at the very end, I made one small reference to, I think the proceeds from, I did a video the Sunday after the George Floyd, everything went down, and I did a thread up unboxing with my friend whose daughter drew a picture of George Floyd. She did like a sketch, and then over the mouth, she wrote, "I can't breathe." And I'm donating all the proceeds to the George Foundation Memorial Fund from that video, but whatever. All I did was reference that in my next video. That's all I said about it. And someone wrote, "Oh, and here I was thinking I could watch a whole video without the conversation of Black Lives Matter come up. Is there no escape?"
God. Oh my God. No, there's no escape.
I was like, give me a break. Like if that's too much for you, honey, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I was shocked because other people weren't even posting videos. So I don't know, whatever. So everybody has their different level of comfort. I appreciate everybody who listened to this episode. And should we call it a night, or do we want to do take it or leave it quickly before we go?
Well,
oh, no,
take it.
Yes. You
want to
do it?
Yes, that sounds fun. Okay.
Okay, let's do it. All right, take it or leave it. Danielle, why don't you lead us through? Because I miss hearing your voice.
All right. So for this week, we are going to talk about types of dresses for take it or leave it. So the first one is maxi dresses. Lori, would you take it or do you leave it? This has nothing to do with brands. It's just the style.
Just the style. So I've been paying closer attention to maxi dresses. Maxi dresses don't look great on me, so it's never a style that I migrate to, but they're pretty big right now, like the Love Shack Fancy that we were talking about earlier. I would definitely take it. I don't like photographing maxi dresses, like, but yes, take it. Yes, take it, I guess. But not my favorite.
What about you, Jess?
Yeah, definitely take it. I think maxi dresses they look so great on tall people, slim or not, but if you're tall, but I'm like 5'1½. So it's not my thing, but definitely take it. Yeah. I think I don't even consider maxi dresses trendy. I think that's almost a classic style now.
Yeah, I agree. I love maxi dresses. I wear maxi dresses. I love them. I'm not that tall. I'm only 5'4", but I have really long legs, so maybe that's why they look good on me. I don't know, but I prefer maxi over midi any day.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the midi because it cuts off right at my calf, which is like wider than everything else. So I'd rather my ankles or above my knees, like my knees. Yeah. All right.
The next one is dresses with patterns or prints. Laura, you go first. We'll go in the same order.
I have been actually very much taking dresses with patterns or prints because I live in black dresses and I have so many black dresses in my inventory and they're hard to identify and they stink to photograph. So just from a reseller perspective, I've been loving like patterns and bright colors that photograph well, and it is spring. So, and I'm trying to get more color into my wardrobe. So definitely take them.
What about you, Jess?
Take it. Sounds fun. And like, I know this is like, some people don't really like this brand, but I think Boden does pattern dress, especially their newer stuff.
I love
Boden. I think they do really good pattern dress. Like, that's what came into mind when you say pattern.
Yeah, I love Boden. I actually just picked up 3 Boden dresses this past week. I love patterns and prints. I struggle with them sometimes. I think it depends on the brand, even though we're not talking about brands. I feel like some brands I just can't, like the prints just aren't my style, or I feel like they don't fit my aesthetic, so I don't grab them. But for the most part, I do like everything I own in my own personal closet is black, white, gray, or neutral. So if I find a really pretty print or some type of like applique kind of design on a dress, I definitely pick it up. Okay, this next one, I feel like I'm going to know the answer, but strapless dresses.
Leave it.
Yeah.
They're hard to sell. I just sold a strapless top from Free People, and I literally want to do a cartwheel because I don't really pick up strapless anymore. Yeah. Just because it's a hard sell. I think you have to have a specific, not you'd have to have, but I think in general, you need to have the right bra, or you have to have no boobs to wear it, or whatever it is that like makes you feel comfortable. I struggle with strapless, so I've stopped picking them up, and they're a slow seller for me. I mean, if it's fantastic, I'll still pick it up, but generally I leave strapless.
Yeah. What about you, Jess?
I'll leave. And it's funny, I never really thought about this, like particularly like each style of dresses, but now that you're asking me, yeah, that's not, they just, and they're like, they're terrible to photograph if they're short or long or not. Mm-hmm. It's just because I have to use a little pants hanger, and then you can't, and then like I'll put on a pants hanger and I'll try like to fluff out like the bust part to kind of make
right.
it.
Not a fan, not a fan for myself because just the way that I'm built, but I only have two strapless dresses that I picked up last year. They're still sitting. I sent them to ThredUp and they didn't move, and I took them back and I figured I'll just relist them and see if they sell, and they're still sitting. So at this point, I'm donating and call it a day.
Yeah. All right. We're all in agreement.
Yeah. The next one is cold shoulder dresses.
I'm letting them go. I feel like cold shoulder had a moment, and I kind of liked it because it always comes back to me. Have you noticed? I don't love my arms. So cold shoulder was a way for me to kind of feel a little sexy, like a little skin showing, but without like sleeveless. I hate my arms. So, I personally liked cold shoulder, but I feel like it's passing by very quickly, if not already gone. So I don't pick up cold shoulder now, but I liked it while it was here.
What about you, Jess?
Leave it, unfortunately. I feel the same as Lori. Like, I don't know. I used to really like the style, and I've never like seen on Instagram, an account was saying like what trends were leaving. And this was like maybe 6 or so months ago. And ever since I saw them say that about cold shoulder, I did kind of let it influence whether or not I picked up cold shoulder or anything. But then I look back, I'm like, yeah, the cold shoulder stuff I have is like, it doesn't sell.
Right.
So I think the style is cute, but it is starting to look dated to me. So definitely leave it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely never picked up cold shoulder and never will.
You never picked it up? I thought it had such a moment. Like at one point, like it was.
Yeah. It just never, you know what it is too? And I'm so guilty of this, but like my personal style and preferences always correlate to what I pick up from my reselling business, which is so bad. But it doesn't appeal to me for me personally. So I just was never I never gravitated towards it. So it's a
I literally had a cold shoulder that looked pretty bomb on me. And
well, I believe you, Lori.
I just put it in the donate pile. Cause like I put it on and I feel like I'm like, I don't know, like walking out of Kmart. Like I feel like I'm supposed to represent fashion. And when I have a cold shoulder shirt on, I just look like I'm outdated. Exactly. Which it really shouldn't, like if it's a classic piece, like I tend to just wear what looks good on me. So, but I put it on, take it off, put it on, take it off. I'm like, just donate it. It's over. The moment is past. All right. Moment of silence for.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, that's so sad. All right. The next one is linen dresses.
I take them. I like linen. Linen, any sort of sustainable fabric is a green light. Linen sells pretty well for me. So I take it. I don't wear a lot of linen, but I like it.
Does it matter what brand to you?
Flax is big for linen. I guess it depends. It wouldn't matter for brand if I was at the bin. If I was at the bins and I was paying very low money for it, I would pick it up regardless. Style matters. But yeah, I guess brand matters a little bit. If I'm paying up for it, brand definitely matters. Yeah. Eileen Fisher is a nice one to pick up for linen as well.
I agree. What about you, Jessica?
I would pick up linen for sure. And of course, anything I pick up brand does matter for the most part, but like linen, like Lori said, flax, if it was Sundance, even if it was Chico's, I'd probably pick up linen because like people really do like, that's a keyword people use. I would definitely pick up linen for almost probably anything, especially if it's like a good style, and especially if it's white, like white linen, because like white linen or just white kind of in general feels like has a very sharp moment from like, I don't believe this, but I know a lot of people, you know, from Memorial Day to Labor Day, So I feel like that's a good piece to have for like the summertime. So summer.
Definitely. Yeah, that's old school, Jessica. But no, for a while I was white after that's how I was brought up.
Really?
Yeah. A little bit.
For me, I pick up almost anything that's linen if the price is right. And another brand to kind of keep your eyes out for is J. Jill's linen. And the only reason I'm saying this is because I picked up two J. Jill pieces. One was at Savers and one was at TJ Maxx. And they both sold within 10 minutes of me listing them. And they sold full asking price and they were 100% linen pieces. So
I have a J. Jill linen shirt on a brick background. And do you know what that means, right?
Oh, you need to relist it then. Rephotograph
it. I've had it since August of 2018. Yes, I stopped picking it up because that damn piece wouldn't sell. But yeah, all right, good to know. I've had some luck with J. Jill recently.
Yeah, I think.
Can I cut in for half a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
About J. Jill. Okay, so J. Jill, there was a J. Jill story here. I knew how expensive it was. I picked it up in the beginning. Because I'm like, this is a good brand. And then in sale, so I stopped picking it up because everybody was like, you know, J. Jill isn't good, J. Jill isn't good. And I've noticed that too, like when we're talking about in the community, like when people start saying things aren't good, then people start picking up less and then it becomes less competition. Because I would say in the last year for sure, like when I was really sourcing, I started picking up J. Jill again because people were like saying not to pick it up. So it wasn't like really being available for people online. And so I definitely think J. Jill kind of came back for a second. Like I haven't, of course, sourced in months, but I was anti J. Jill, but I'm kind of like pro J. Jill again. I like her.
Well, I think their styles are really cute too. And they're a lot of more modern, like even like Eileen Fisher and stuff, their styles are very similar. They have very similar aesthetics to them. J. Jill, Eileen Fisher, Flax is a little different. That's more lag and look, but like those type of brands have very similar looks to them. And I think people are starting to realize that. So
yeah, I know J. Jill is
what looks good on.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I was saying that people know, they know what looks good on them. So they know exactly what they're looking for.
100%.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Somebody just mentioned, sorry, just for a second.
No, go ahead.
On one of my videos, they said, whenever a reseller or an influencer gives a bolo, I run in the other direction.
Yes.
And I was laughing. I was talking about how Frame and Rag and Bone jeans have
been. Oh my God.
Yeah, so they commented and they said, I'm not picking up anything that a reseller says to buy. I was laughing because I get it.
Okay, yeah, I do the same thing. I try not to listen to what people are and are not picking up because I feel like it's so different for all of us. But yeah, take it with a grain of salt, everyone. The last one we're going to do is silk dresses.
I don't know. I feel like silk is really dependent on style. I always find silk with stains. But I mean, generally silk is a plus. The last silk dress that I picked up was a Diane von Furstenberg. I paid up for it. And it sold in less than a week for $75. And my Diane had been sitting forever. I was very hesitant to pick it up and it was raw silk and it sold really fast. So that was a pro. So, I mean, yeah, I think so. Yes.
What about you, Jess?
Yes, I would pick up silk pieces. And I haven't, since I've been sourcing, I haven't been photographing. But I think it was around January, I did pick up a silk Sundance dress. I photographed it and I never listed it. So it's currently on its way to throw it up. But it being silk was definitely part of the reason why I picked it up. And it was like a red silk and it was a maxi dress. And I think it was silk and linen. Like the top, around to maybe the knees were like, yeah, I have this, Lori, I'll send you a picture on Instagram because I think I still have the photo of it. A decent dress, but yeah, I do like silk, but like Lori's, unless it has stains.
Yeah.
But yeah, anything that's now that I didn't even really understand until recently, like between man-made fashion and then like natural fibers. So anything that's like a natural fiber, like linen or silk, I definitely, especially because we're in such this big like sustainable movement right now.
Exactly.
Like everybody's really trying to be conscious. So yeah, I'll definitely pick up anything with natural fibers.
Yeah, I definitely pick up silk dresses, or I gravitate towards the linens and the silks and all of that. I have to be super careful because I fall into the trap of like, ooh, it's silk, I have to get it. But then I need to really inspect it, because silk, you can get a lot of those pulls in it. If it stretches out too much or the stains, then I'd have to dry clean it. And is it worth it, kind of thing?
So silk is a delicate fabric, you know, as I feel like linen's a little more sturdy, cotton, wool. I mean, wool you have to check out really carefully. But yeah, so I agree. I think we all agree that silk is like beautiful, but it's tricky.
It is. All right, guys, that wraps it up.
Wow. Well, Jessica, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. And it was so nice to get to know you a little bit better. I had so much fun, and you are a wealth of information in the reseller community too. You've been here for a while. You passed the 2-year mark.
I know. So now I'm questioning. I've kind of realized too, I think I might have like commitment issues, because like, I left my job at the bank at the 2-year. Because like right now I haven't even been interested in sourcing. So I'm like, oh, am I getting like that itch to go do something else? So I'm not really sure what's next. So I don't feel like super confident talking about reselling at the moment, because I'm like, oh, am I really like still an expert? I'm not sure if I want to keep doing it. But this is very nice. So I really appreciate it.
Oh gosh, we loved having you on the show, hon. So thank you so much. And everybody, you can check out our show notes and definitely follow Jessica on Instagram. And thanks everybody for listening. If you're still listening, we appreciate it.
Thank you guys. And I will see you next week for another Coffee Talk episode. Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Today's sponsor is Hero Cosmetics. They sent us over the Mighty Patch, which is a hydrocolloid acne patch. My son Rocco tried these out, and we were both so impressed with the results. He had a bad breakout, so he stuck on a Mighty Patch original overnight, and in the morning, his pimple was totally flat. The patch had gently absorbed the pimple. Unlike some of the harsher products on the market, the Mighty Patch was so effective without irritating his skin. And you could see all of the gunk that it removed right on the patch. Very cool. If you want to try the Mighty Patch for yourself or for someone in your family, use the code THRIFTERS15 for 15% off at herocosmetics.com. Now back to the show.